Chapter 8. Solace. Solace's new loyalties only went so far. She might be crew and an honorary colonial, just like Kittering their Hannah Lambra, but that didn't mean she'd forgotten whose vat they'd decanted her from. As soon as she could, she broke from the others and sent a coded missive to monitor superior tact. The Lung Crow orbital could play its games, but if the architects were back, the Parthenon needed to know. In fact, the rest of the galaxy needed the Parthenon to know. "Keep it secret," she requested, and reckoned that would be in the Parthenon's interest too, for long enough that she hoped she wasn't screwing over the Vulture God. Her duty done, she went to play colonial, which meant shore leave and drinking. Ostensibly, she thought it might help her mission to get to know Idris's crewmates, although Chris Almio was distractingly eye-catching. The dark woman had peeled away to sit at the bar with a decidedly fancier drink than anyone else, and had been doing something technical with a slate. Solace saw it was some kind of game, bright, visually simple, and yet deceptively difficult, like a lot of colonial culture. "So, what's your story, precisely?" Chris started as Solace sat down. "What's it to you, soldier?" "Crewmate," Solace corrected without acrimony. "Not really sure what you are." Chris tucked the slate away, as though the game contained the secrets of creation. "Except Idris is weird around you." "We're old friends," Solace said easily, signalling for a drink. "What are the odds, huh?" Solace could tell that Chris was wary of her, yet the woman still squared her shoulders pugnaciously and added, "If you cause trouble for my client, just be aware I'm up on hegemonic law as well as colonial. I can protect him from you wherever the hell we go outside your space, and Rollo and Kit know better than to take a job within reach of the Parthenon." Solace's instinct was to hint darkly that the Parthenon's reach extended everywhere, including right here, right now. A moment later, the words unsaid, she felt deeply unhappy with herself. "We're old friends," Solace repeated, less glibly now. "We were at Berlinhof. And yes, no coincidence running into him. I was sent. But I'm not going to just stuff him in a sack and run off. I have an offer for him, when he's ready to hear it." "And if he says no?" "Then it's no, of course. Until I get an order that it has to be yes." "Who are you, Chris? Never heard of a shipboard lawyer before." "Kerestina Sulin Almier, certified advocate out of Scintilla." The words were smart enough, but one of her hands twisted her bright scarf. Shimmering gold, this one. Solace hadn't seen her wear the same one on two consecutive days yet. "Ice ball," she noted, trying to remember anything else about the planet. "They were crazy there," she recalled. "Rich, educated, rigid society, weird customs. It was on a list of colonial planets where any Partheni insertion was flagged as dangerous." "Would have thought you could do better than this," she noted. "And I'm not trying to cast shade, just saying."
"Outside the Parthenon, we don't always end up where we expect," was Chris's answer to that.
"You could come too, if Idris accepts my offer," Solace said frankly.
"In the unlikely event he lets me even make it.
Add Partheni regulations to your legal portfolio. You'd be in great demand. Precious few colonials know their way around them."
She lifted her eyebrows inquiringly.
"You think winning me over's the way to get him to play along?" Chris asked her. "Or," she frowned abruptly, "are you coming on to me, Myrmidon?" Solace had a moment of being taken equally by surprise at the thought.
then shrugged. Well, you colonials can be funny about that kind of thing, but if you are up for it. Chris goggled at her, and Solis waited to see if she had retained her settled world prejudices, or if she'd picked up a space's more liberal mores. It was page one of the Partheni playbook that colonials were weird about sex in 100 conflicting ways, and you shouldn't ever get into this sort of conversation. But Chris had brought it up. In the end, the woman coloured and looked away, fiddling with her scarf again. Well, it's not my normal thing, but I guess I'm flattered. Solis grinned, despite herself. Offer's there. I guess it is just women, for you people, Chris went on slowly, in what Solis felt was an encouragingly intrigued manner. At home, when you get sent out, you experiment. And without meaning to, she glanced across the bar at Idris. When she looked back, Chris was staring at her, wide-eyed. Idris? Seriously? She said. For a moment, Solis thought she was jealous or horrified, but the woman's expression had resolved into something like mischievous glee. Solis found herself entirely wrong-footed, because she'd meant to keep that firmly under wraps. Apparently one drink was all it took to unshell her. She was saved from having to give further details when a large man pushed his way to the bar. He sat so close to Chris that he almost shoved her off her stool. The lawyer opened her mouth to reproach him, but he looked bleakly at the pair of them and said, "Deumaru." Solis's fighting reflexes kicked in instantly. Angels of punching you in the face, and she was ready to make good on the name. The man was beefier than colonials normally got, even broader than Magden's Voyeni soldiers. His hair and beard were cropped to a stubble, and his knuckly face was blotched with blue and purple discolorations. There was something very wrong with him too. His clothing was slit from the neck to the small of his back, because some creature was implanted there. It was a thing between a lobster and a bee, armoured in parts, bristly with jagged hairs. Several limbs were dug deep into the man's body, the flesh around them warped and lumpy. Its handful of stalked eyes flicked about, scanning the crowd. Solis had no idea what it was, except nasty. Very nasty. Chris very carefully set down her plastic beaker. "Umaru, should that mean something?" she said. The newcomer regarded them without humour.
"You brought her back from deep void."
His Colville was accented strangely.
"My employer has an interest in her. Tell me where she is, please."
"Nope," Chris said. "Not our fleas, not our circus," Solis added, which, from their expressions, wasn't a saying that had travelled outside the Parthenon. The man, the symbiont, Solis decided, smiled thinly. She wondered whether the joining of flesh also meant a joining of minds.
"Do not make a game of this," he continued. "My employer is desirous that his staff have access to the ship. This can be a pleasant matter of contractual recompense, or it can lead to matters less pleasant."
"Take this up with our factor. I'm just crew," Chris said carelessly.
"The Hani says you are already under contract. I did explain that this was problematic to my employer, but the little crab would not be moved. To avoid the unpleasantness, I come to the crew. Show me the ship now, please.
He put his big hands on the bar, and Chris instantly moved several steps away. Danger hung about him, like he sweated it.
You don't want to kick off any unpleasantness with me, Solis told him evenly.
He merely grinned.
You're the patho they told me about. Good for you. You're not the only ones who fight. To the ship now, please.
Solis stood, calm and battle-ready. Now actual face-punching was imminent. When violence erupted from two tables away, it caught all three of them entirely by surprise. She aimed a fist at the symbiont out of sheer reflex, and he'd gone for her in the same moment. She twisted aside as her blow glanced off a cheekbone, hard as steel. A moment later, someone in red robes was thrown into the pair of them. Symbiont hit the bar with his elbow, cracking the counter and yelping in surprisingly high-pitched pain. Solis herself went with the momentum and put the bar between them. She ended up half-covered by robes, shouldering aside the dazed cultist turned missile. When she put her head above the parapet, the whole room had erupted into fighting, and Symbiont was gone. For a moment she thought Chris had been carried off as well, but the lawyer was also crouched behind the dubious cover of the cracked bar. What is this? Solis demanded, feeling as though their own fight should have taken precedence over this random farrago. Even as she spoke, Chris shouted, Idris! And was off into the melee, drawing a narrow-bladed knife from her sleeve. Solis vaulted the bar and was right behind her. At a booth across the room were Idris, Rollo, and Ollie. Solis's heart sank to see that someone had driven a dagger into their plastic tabletop, because she knew precisely what that bit of theatre meant. The betrayed, with their humans-for-humans sentiments. Between her and them was a room full of brawling people, either trying to get into or out of a fight, all representing a serious obstacle. A corps of young colonial men were going for anyone wearing cult robes or hegemony regalia. A cultist stumbled into her, robes flapping, and tried to punch her in the face. She blocked and elbowed him in the jaw with brutal efficiency. He spat blood from his savagely bitten tongue and reeled away. She felt absurdly indignant, because frankly, none of this was their fight. However, a man had Idris by the collar, and she remembered that intermediaries were on the betrayed's long list of race traitors. How they'd identified Idris for what he was, she didn't know. But presumably, that was why someone was trying to choke him to death. Rollo slugged the man, who let the int go and lurched sideways. He hit an electrified prong that Ollie had jabbed out from her walker frame, and fell, shuddering. Then a bulkier opponent appeared, popped Rollo in the nose, and kicked Ollie back into the wall. Solis powered through the fist-happy crowd. Halfway across the room, she had a sudden crisis of conscience and looked for Chris, surely at the mercy of the mob. Except Chris was tight at her back, knife held along the line of her arm. Even as Solis glanced in her direction, the lawyer took a cultist's arm, twisting it viciously to bend the man backwards. She then kicked her victim's legs out from him, her blade remaining unblooded. No need to escalate just yet. A bundle of bodies cannoned into Solis, even as they moved forwards, two spacers laying into a cultist. One of them saw her, processed her as an ally, then realised his mistake. He was a particularly ugly customer, his own nativist sympathies on show with the cross-hilted knife inked onto his forehead. The Parthenon was right at the top of the betrayed's hate list. She swayed back from his right fist's wild swing, and then his left came at her with a knuckle duster studded with nails. His friend was right behind with a knife.
Escalation it is, then.
Knuckles came for solace with both fists this time. She caught one, rammed it back into its owner's face, and then deflected the other so the knuckle duster raked across Blade's abdomen. Then Blade rammed into her, knocking her over. She rolled out from underneath him, ramming an elbow into his head. But Knuckles got a grip on her knee and drew back his fist full of nails for a pounding. Chris cut his ear off. For the briefest moment, mid-brawl, Solace and Knuckles both stared at the ear as it flopped to the floor. Chris had stepped back, knife poised, and the back of her other arm presented to block. Knuckles rose, roaring to his full height, Solace forgotten on the ground. He grabbed for Chris and received the Myrmidon's booted foot right in the groin. She reckoned she'd fractured the man's pelvis. She kicked Blade in the head for good measure as Chris hauled her to her feet. Over at the table, Barney had appeared and was wrestling fiercely with the man who'd hit Rollo. Solace punched their antagonist in the back of the head and floored him.
"Where's Idris?" Chris yelled. "There!"
Ollie had righted herself and was pointing a truncated arm across the room. Solace spotted a knot of red and purple figures with Idris's slender form in the middle.
"Oh, for—"
It seemed particularly unjust, in the middle of this fight that was not their fight, that they'd have to go toe-to-toe with both sides. A moment later, Idris was gesturing, apparently unharmed, and they shouldered their way over. Medvig was sheltering amongst the cultists too, Solace saw, and Kittering had been under the table all along. They had sensibly decided against getting trampled by a roomful of mad humans. The cultists were armed with shock batons and koshes, more than ready to give any marauding nativist a run for their money. Around that time, station security finally arrived and started cuffing rioters, or at least any rioters without hegemony colours. Rollo made the call that perhaps they were with the cultists after all. Soon, the bar was quiet again, and security were considerately removing the unconscious bodies. Solace stared at the dagger stuck into the crew's erstwhile tabletop.
"So, that's a thing," Chris agreed, following her gaze. "The betrayed. They'll all get rooted out of here sharpish by the cult, now the hegemony's taken over."
Solace nodded. The betrayed were a relatively new faction within internal colonial politics. They were officially decried by Hugh, and yet, mysteriously, they'd never been outlawed. The Parthenon didn't care for the legitimate nativist movement either, which was all about returning to one unified human identity. They celebrated old Earth and embraced the rhetoric of humanity's past glories. The betrayed went a step further, preaching that humanity would have been the galaxy's dominant species if allowed to fight the architects properly. But intermediaries had made some sort of sham peace, they claimed, part of a grand conspiracy to keep humans down. Needless to say, the hegemonic cult was right up there in their sights as well, which brought them round to...
"Who are your new friends, my wayward son?" Rollo asked.
Before Idris could speak, a thin, greying woman amongst the cultists said,
"Captain Rostand of the Vulture God."
"A responsibility that seems to bring only trouble these days," he agreed warily.
She managed a creditable smile.
"My Hieragrave has asked me to invite you to dinner, sir."
Rollo looked over the ruin of the bar, then back to her.
"That so?"
he asked, his usual loquaciousness deserting him in the fact of this unexpected development.
"He has a business proposition for you. Perhaps you and he..."
"Oh no, my friend," It's all of us or nothing at this point. This orbital has a case of the frothing fits on it, so make sure your table has something fit for a Hanny. Help me out.
Rollo bent towards Chris as they followed the cultists through the orbital's quieter passageways.
Why wine and dine us when they run the place now? We've got nothing they need, surely.
The cult isn't unified. Right now, various cells will be jockeying to see who gets to be the mouthpiece for their masters, she speculated. The clams, she bit off the slur, the Essiel, are very hands-off when it comes to how they rule, so long as they get what they want. Winning divine favour can get underhand and sneaky fast. Solace had shuffled closer to Idris. You all right? He looked at her warily.
For now. Except Barney was shooting his mouth off about deep void work to what turned out to be a knot of betrayed.
And deep void work meant ints. You get that reaction a lot?
You're going to tell me it had never happened in the Parthenon, right?
She opened her mouth to say, well, it wouldn't. Closed it again. Still not the right time, but what would it take? Just give me a chance, Idris. Let me spiel and then I'll be out of your hair.
Give your spiel, he corrected, smiling a little. Your Colvol's slipping.
Also, you're changing the subject, she pointed out. He shrugged.
Probably. I do that.
And then they had arrived, apparently. They'd gone some way into the domestic areas of the orbital, amongst nests of rooms occupied by station staff and permanent residents. These cabins were stacked three or four high and separated every now and again by high atria and claustrophobic light wells. The latter had probably been intended as public squares, so long as your public was happy to gather in groups of no more than a dozen. Here, though, three units had been converted into some kind of eatery, decked out in hegemonic colours. Plainly, this neighbourhood was well ahead of the curve in adapting to the system's new masters. There was a large table ready for them, half a dozen richly robed cultists already standing by their chairs. Staff bustled past, setting places. They'd even left spaces for Ollie's walker and Medvig's frame, and put in a high, narrow stool for Kittering. All in all, not a bad show. Please, the lead cultist invited them, and the crew sat cautiously. Solace saw Chris adjust the sit of her knife within her sleeve, and Rollo squared his shoulders. Nobody really trusted this development not to go sour at the first opportunity. Then, their benefactor arrived, the Hierograve, from the way the other cultists reacted, and Solace burst out, I know you! For a moment, she couldn't quite place him. He was balding with a fringe of white hair about the ears and a well-groomed beard. She found herself wanting to stroke it. It was a novelty to Partheni eyes and looked soft and woolly as a blanket. Colonial men tended to misinterpret that kind of thing, though, so she kept her hands to herself. His high-collared robe was eloquent evidence of his cult standing, but his eyes had a good-natured twinkle to them, suggesting he was as harmless as everyone's favourite grandfather. Solace, who had no male relatives of any kind, didn't trust him an inch, and she reckoned the rest of the Vulture's crew were just as leery.
His wisdom, the bearer Sathiel, the cultist woman announced,
and Solace abruptly recalled seeing the man in the news media types. He'd been talking about Hwe Kavor entering a bold new age, and how his sect had been instrumental in converting the populace to hegemonism.
Well, this is a grand honour and no mistake, Rollo said, without enthusiasm.
The restaurant staff began bringing out food, a mix of bland but nutritious colonial staples and weird-looking dishes from hegemonic worlds. Kittering received a bowl of something that looked like coarse-grained coloured sand that his mandibles picked at with gusto. Nobody seemed to know what to do with Medvig, but in the end the hiver just co-opted whatever was going. When they had a pile of assorted foodstuffs in front of them, their insect-form selves swarmed out of their frame and attacked everything omnivorously, breaking it all down into proteins and energy. Sathiel twinkled at Rollo, who smiled right back. For a moment, Solas thought the pair were going to have an avuncle off right there at the table. Then one of the Hieroglyph's people bustled forward to remove his high collar and peel back his robe, revealing a thin mauve tunic underneath.
"They look hot, those things," Rollo said, around a spoon of algae.
"And heavy. But that's responsibility, isn't it?"
Sathiel smiled, as though faintly embarrassed by all of it.
"Captain, we have a mutual problem, you and I, and it's sitting in Bay 98 right now."
"You have a problem with my ship, friend?"
Rollo asked him mildly.
"You have the problem," Sathiel said. "Right at this moment, a certain station administrator of our acquaintance is looking into impounding it for her own purposes. She wishes to retain control of a sensitive cargo you brought back from the deep void."
"This is perhaps the worst-kept secret I've ever encountered in my long career," Rollo remarked.
"Some of the administrative staff know how our masters may be best served," Sathiel said piously. "We therefore heard you have evidence of an architect attack, a recent one too. You can appreciate this is of prime importance to the galaxy as a whole, and the hegemony in particular."
"You mean if you parade our cargo about in public, everyone will suddenly want to wear a fancy robe like yours?"
Ollie said sharply. The cultists bristled, but Sathiel took no overt offence.
"Do you not think, Madame Timo, that people deserve the chance to save their worlds from destruction? Or should we wait until an architect appears over Ossa, or Friedrich, perhaps?"
"Why not just wash your robes at station admin, then?"
Medvig's comment was even blunter than customary, perhaps because half of their processing power was devoted to eating.
"I think you've already discovered that we're experiencing some unrest here," Sathiel told them. "And our local admins, who were vociferously anti-hegemony, are now trying to grab power by any means possible. There are also nativist sympathizers in positions of authority. I would rather be in possession of the Umaru and then ask permission to stop anything happening to it."
"Wait," Solas broke in. "Do you have someone on your payroll who has a sort of insect thing plugged into his back?" She exchanged glances with Chris.
"A Tothiat, you mean?" Sathiel asked. "Not in my retinue. It's a rare adaptation."
So who was that Tothiat exactly? One more complicating factor.
"What are you proposing, your wisdom?"
Rollo asked.
"I am suggesting that your people and my people go down to the bay in defiance of the impounding order. I will ensure that all staff on duty are keen to earn favour with our masters and thereby clear your way. You can then take your ship out and leave the Umaru in full view outside the orbital. Everyone will see it and know just what happened, Sathiel said. And then we can put all this ridiculous cloak and dagger business out of the way and proceed into the future like grown-ups. What do you say?
Rollo glanced at Kittering, whose arm screens were running with a screed of Colville text, contractual terms and rates. Apparently the only variable the factor was concerned about was not doing it for free. Then the captain looked to Chris.
Factor Leng won't be happy, the lawyer opined.
A matter of less than no consequence to me, Rollo decided. Nobody who wants to tie down my ship is a friend. And what about your lot?
A frank stare at Solace.
Me?
Tell me you didn't skip straight off and tell your people what we had here.
Not angry, but not smiling right now either.
Parthenon's already taking action to keep this for themselves. Maybe? You tell me.
But Solace found she didn't know. Probably if she contacted Tact right now, she'd be told the secret must be kept for a few more days to give the Parthenon room to manoeuvre. Except the Parthenon seemed very far away, and the Vulture and its crew were right here. And their ship was their entire livelihood, their home, and everything they had.
Do it. Let's go,
she heard herself say. She was keenly aware of Idris staring at her.
If there's Partheni trouble, I'll field it, Captain.
Rollo's gaze bored into her, and he nodded curtly.
Welcome to the crew, my daughter, he said.
She felt a spike of utterly misplaced pride that she hated herself for only a moment later. They finished the meal because it was good eating. If you were colonial, dinner invites didn't happen very often. Nobody could get very drunk under the circumstances, but the mood certainly lightened. Rollo and Sathiel ended up swapping anecdotes at the head of the table. Then, after the last platter had been sent back to the recycler, the hierograve stood.
Let's go get your ship back, he told them, and spread truth to the universe.
Let's do just that thing, my children,
Rollo agreed, pushing back his bench and nearly unseating Barney, who'd been sharing it. Sathiel was obviously leery of his grandfatherly face being seen subverting station authority. Instead, he sent his deputy to appease station security, heading up a little red-clad delegation. Rollo was at her heels, talking with Kit about the next job the factor had lined up.
Anywhere but here, he was saying,
and Solace wondered how much of the galaxy was out of bounds to the man. Hey, it was Idris, unexpectedly at her elbow. Going native on us. A sharp answer died on her lips.
I don't know what I'm doing right now, she admitted. Let's just get everyone out of here first. Then we can reset to where we were.
I appreciate it, though, he said implacably. Helping us. Ship family matters out here. More than cults, governments, and what planet you come from. It's only when you spend your life planetside that people lose their minds over that sort of thing.
And you don't want to be part of anything that big, she finished for him.
I do not, no. No more of that for me, sorry.
The cultists were at the bay access hatch now, and signalling to be let in. But their friendly collaborators inside were apparently playing it coy. Ollie just trundled her walker forwards and found a diagnostic socket she could plug into. An eye blink later, she had the door open, with a derisive sound that said absolutely everything about Lung Crow electronic security.
there were three lifeless bodies on the other side. They wore station security uniforms, and they'd been burned by beam weapons. The lead cultist let out a yelp and shrank back, but Rollo just bulled forward, shouting, "God damn it! My ship!" The door on the far side of the security check was open, and they piled through. There hung the hideous, beautiful flower of the Umaru, still clutched in the vulture god's grasp. There were more dead security on the catwalk, plus a couple of ragged-looking spacers whose co-conspirators were even now at the vulture's open hatch.
"Bastards!"
Rollo hissed, and snatched up one of the security men's guns, running for the cover of the railing. Solace was already moving, grabbing a weapon for herself, bitterly regretting that her armour and accelerator were inside the ship. There were four men at the vulture's hatch, which probably meant some were already inside. Most were human, and their leader was mostly human too. The non-human part was that lobster bee thing that had merged with his back. A Tothiat, Sathiel had called it, and now Solace was kicking herself because she hadn't asked what that meant. She shot him anyway. The security guns were hardly Mr. Punch, so wouldn't knock holes in the wrong walls. They punched a hole into the Tothiat easily enough, though, right into the left side of his gut. He fell back against the vulture god's hull. Rollo tried a shot too, striking sparks from his own ship. Barney had a third gun, but was fiddling with it, and Solace had to yell how to disable the safety. She risked a glance around. Chris and Idris were just taking cover, which was probably for the best. Ollie was bustling forwards on her walker frame, her eyes fixed determinedly on the ship. Medvig's tripod body stalked after her, their remotes corkscrewing through the air towards the hijackers. The men at the hatch were scattering for cover, and Solace drilled another through the leg so that he landed hard on the gantry, howling in pain and distracting his friends. Barney and Ollie pushed forward at that, clattering up shaky metal steps to a higher railing where they'd have a vantage point. The engineer was grimacing furiously, but hadn't fired a shot yet. What the unarmed Ollie felt she could contribute, Solace couldn't guess. A figure appeared within the vulture. Not a human, but a crab-like Hanny, and it was tracking Barney with some kind of weapon mounted atop its shell. Solace shot it over the rim of its half-raised shield arms, hitting the clutch of limbs and mouthparts below its eyes. The creature's many legs jerked, and it toppled limply out onto the gantry.
"Go!"
said Rollo, taking his own advice and making a run for his ship. Solace registered a growing shudder throughout the bay and realised that someone on board had engaged the vulture's mass drives, ready to rip the vessel and its salvage free of the station's hold. The hijackers in the hangar opened fire upon Rollo, then Medvig's remotes were on them, slapping, gouging, and generally making a nuisance of themselves. The Hiver's body frame was motionless, worryingly out in the open, as they devoted all their concentration to the task. Solace ran to back up Rollo, then shooting erupted behind her. She whirled and saw that the hijackers had friends who'd been elsewhere, probably dealing with the docking controls. They'd just unloaded their weapons into the knot of cultists and cut them down. Worse, they had Idris. Chris was facing the human newcomers, her knife out against their guns. What had Idris was a Castigar, though. They came in all shapes, both natural and engineered. But this one looked the standard model, a 4-meter black leech whose body terminated in a host of squirming, eye-tipped limbs. It also sported a metal hood equipped with pincers and weapon barrels. The pincers had closed about Idris's body, lifting the int partway off the floor.
"Bring him! Get in the ship!"
someone yelled, and Solace saw numbly that the Tothiat was back on his feet, despite the lethal hole she'd put in him.
He wasn't even favouring his unhurt side as he grabbed his comrade with the shot leg and practically threw him on board the Vulture.
"Stand down, or your man gets torn up," he yelled at Rollo, facing down the captain's levelled gun with equanimity. "You get off my ship!"
Rollo roared back furiously, gun shaking, but not lowering an inch. The Castigar surged forward. Rippling muscular waves swept down its body, sending it eeling along the gantry at the speed of a running man. Idris went jolting along in its vice-like grip. Solis had her weapon levelled at it, but it was deliberately keeping its victim between it and her. She didn't know enough about Castigar physiology to be certain of taking it down. Medvig's remotes hovered about it like flies, not daring a landing.
"My employer regrets this," the Tothiat boomed, "but we need your ship to move that piece of junk. Maybe we'll sell it back to you."
His confederates had left cover to scurry over to the Vulture. Rollo took another frustrated step forward, right out into the open, his face purple with rage. The Tothiat levelled his gun as the Castigar and its fellows raced up a parallel gantry, with Idris still jerking about like a doll.
"Fuck you!"
Barney suddenly shouted from on high, finally getting his gun to work. His shot clipped the Tothiat's temple, almost spreading the symbiont's brains across the Vulture's paintwork. Solis's gun took out one of the men at the hatch as the others returned fire. She heard Ollie's cry of grief and froze. Then Barney toppled over their walkway's railing, buckling the gantry below with his dead weight. All hell broke loose. The Castigar and friends were entering the ship now, the Tothiat gesturing frantically for them to hurry. Then something burst out of the hatch, a thing of legs and arms with a whipping, saw-edged tail. The sight was sudden and monstrous enough to even startle a yell from Solis. It was Ollie's scorpion frame, and it moved like monkeys and spiders, claws and saw tearing into the nearest hijacker and ripping him apart. Up on the high gantry, Ollie was slumped back in her walker, eyes closed, as she remotely wrangled the scorpion into a frenzy of destruction. Then the Castigar's headmount jolted as it unleashed a searing beam of energy against the scorpion, followed by a rattle of accelerator pellets. They punched a dozen holes in the frame without slowing it, but the distraction allowed Idris to twist out of its grip and run for his life, heading back down the walkway towards the crew. One of the other hijackers tried to retrieve him, and Solis put a bullet in the man's head on her second attempt. The Tothiat rolled his shoulders, then laid hands on the scorpion's far greater bulk. Before Solis's incredulous gaze, he crouched and just tipped the half-ton of machinery over a broken rail, leaving it flailing and clinging to the twisted metal with half its limbs. Then he leapt inside the Vulture, perhaps about to abandon his comrades, and make off with the prize. Medvig's remotes grabbed him, all three of them, latching on like hands. As they jetted away, they dragged him halfway out of the ship. The Tothiat shouted and tried to bring up his gun, but they wouldn't let him, yanking him left and right and spoiling his aim. Then the Castigar had lumped its long body up to the hatch, despite Solis putting a bullet into some part of it. Its weaponized hood swung round until it found the hiver and its beam lashed out again. Medvig's chest unit glowed red as their outer layers ablated away. Something inside them blew, showering molten metal and sparks. In the aftermath, Solis saw blazing insectoid bodies crawling frantically out from the hole, dropping to the ground and spinning on their backs as they crisped and died. The Tothiat and a handful of his followers were aboard the Vulture now, and the Castigar snaked aboard after,
turning to spray the bay with a salvo of accelerator shots. They drilled through walls and stanchions without significantly slowing. Solis felt the familiar shudder of an atmosphere bubble contending with unplanned apertures. Then the vulture's hatch closed, and the ship was on the move. It slid sideways out of the bay with a roar of thrusters, pulling its terrible cargo, forcing Rollo and the rest back. Solis instinctively tracked it with her purloined gun, but it wasn't designed to puncture a ship's hull. A moment later, and they were left in the ravaged bay, staring at Barney's corpse and Medvig's burnt-out shell.